You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places and prom dresses of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. If you wandered deep into the LA Convention Center on a recent Saturday and you took the escalator up to the mezzanine and peeked your head into an enormous windowless room, you would have seen hundreds of teenagers browsing through racks upon racks of shiny, strappy, satiny clothing. These teens are picking out prom dresses and suits at the annual Glamour Gowns Suit Up event. And everything they're shopping for, it's free.
They pick out dresses, they pick out shoes, bags, jewelry, things that they just customarily don't get to shop for on a regular basis.
Co-chair and longtime volunteer Sibony Sneer explains Glamour Gowns partners with children's advocacy group Casa LA to benefit kids in the foster care system, the juvenile justice system, and other low-income youth in the LA area.
They just feel special, and that's our aim. We want them to walk away feeling like they went to Disneyland.
Reporter Juliana Mayo met some of those teens as they searched for the perfect outfit, and she brings us this story.
For 20 years, Glamour Gowns Suit Up has been bringing a little bit of fanciness to kids in LA's foster care system. It's an annual one-stop prom shop that gives teens access to clothing and accessories, not to mention professional tailoring, so they can look their best at prom. Or just get a snazzy outfit and a special day out with their friends.
I heard about it from my brother and my friend.
This is Kat, who's 17 and attends Jordan Senior High School in Watts. We're not using last names for this story to avoid identifying kids in foster care.
They got a nice dress and a nice suit. I'm like, damn, I want one. I want to look fancy. I want to look like a Disney princess.
I mean, who doesn't? Kat's sister Jocelyn, who is 16, brought a collection of pics on her phone of what she hoped to find. The girl had a vision.
I'm looking for like a pantsuit but with a skirt around it. Or something that involves like pants, because I don't like wearing skirts or dresses. I don't really like showing my arms, so I'm hoping for like a long sleeve.
Forget plunging necklines. Jocelyn was more concerned with how much she could cover rather than how little.
Something a little poofy, but at the same time, like classy.
And they were off, paired up with personal shoppers to help them navigate the room full of colorful dresses and purses and jewelry and shoes and all the things you need to get properly dolled up. The majority of these goods were donated by local LA businesses and gave the room the air of an enormous Santee Alley fancy dress store. To be transparent, I have volunteered to be one of these personal shoppers many times over the years. Jocelyn was matched with Marin Landry, a longtime volunteer.
Okay, Marin will show you around and see what you can find out there, okay? All right, good luck.
But the first dress was a bust. Think maroon, satin column, December wedding, mother of the bride vibe.
I don't know, it's giving me, like a bridesmaid.
All right, cool. You know what? You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Let's go try on another one, and if you want to come back to this one, I'll get you a bigger size, but if you don't like it, then we'll just move on, right? Next.
A lot of the clothes Jocelyn and Kat were trying on were too small, which was clearly getting a little frustrating. Over on the other side of the dressing room, Kat and Jocelyn's friend, 19-year-old Alicia, and her personal shopper, found a winner.
This is the one.
It was a pretty stunning lavender sheath dress with lots of strappy embellishments.
This is yes to the dress, yes. I've seen that show so many times. This is a yes to the dress. It's purple, long. It just feels like me.
The dress just needed a few adjustments to get it fitting perfectly. So they headed over to Alterations, where a small crew of local union costumers was volunteering at the sewing machines.
These are people that work a gazillion hours a week.
Sneer sings the praises of the volunteers and what their work means to the kids.
And they still come to us on the weekend and say, whatever you need us to do, we'll take care of it. It's something we all take for granted. Oh, I can just go to the cleaners and have this altered. That's not their experience.
Not all the kids come for prom or to get the free alterations, though. In the suit room, I met Damien, who was working a different angle.
My foster dad said, hey, you want a suit? I'm like, nah, said, you could wear it, you could sell it. I'm like, I could sell it? All right. Gotta make the money somehow.
And Alaysia told me she was there for cosplay purposes. So after she said yes to her dress, I had to know who she was planning to dress up as.
Probably even do Isabella from Encanto. I've seen that movie too many times to now I'm going to probably be her.
That all worked for Sneer, whose aim is to give kids access to things that might not typically be available to them.
And that's really the focus, is just getting them everything they could possibly want that normally they don't have the opportunity to get. You know, we all take it for granted that we can just pop over to Macy's, Nordstrom's, or whatever our favorite store is and pick up a dress when we need it. This is not their experience and has never been their experience. So being able to bring essentially a department store of everything to them, I was just standing in the corner of the room and it's overwhelming.
Back at the dress station, Jocelyn, who you may recall was looking for pants and long sleeves, found something very different.
I'm wearing like a navy blue glittery dress, and it kind of has like a crop top to it, but it's pretty because it gets covered by a fabric, and I don't know, it just makes me like, I have like butterflies, like, and I just love it. So I think this is the one.
Should we go?
It was pretty cool to see her embrace a sleeveless dress with sheer elements that she looked absolutely fabulous in. She seemed delighted, too.
It makes you feel like it's like your wedding day, like kind of, but for prom. And it also makes you feel like as me as a big girl, it makes you feel comfortable with everyone around you. Like no one's judging, no one's looking, and like there's even some people that are almost like me and it's hard for them too, but they don't care, so it's not really on your size because they will try their very best to fit it, your dress for you.
Her sister Kat found a winner as well. A V-cut sleeveless sage gown with lace and sequin detailing around the bust and a full skirt. She couldn't wait to show it off to her boyfriend, who was planning on coordinating his suit to her dress at prom.
I want to remember this day when I'm in my 40s drinking wine and just being like wearing the dress. I'm like, I was one of the hottest people in prom. I think this is going to be really fun.
After a long Saturday in those windowless convention center rooms, Glamour Gown Suit Up ended up giving out 98 suits and 151 people said yes to the dress. For the next few weeks, these high school students will be practicing wearing their new heels and tying their ties before they can finally show off all their fabulousness in person at prom 2022. For KCRW, I'm Juliana Mayo.
By the way, if you'd like to learn more about Glamour Gown's Suit Up, we have a link to their website on our website, kcrw.com/GLA. Moving on now with Greater L.A. on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. President Joe Biden nominated L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti to be U.S. Ambassador to India pending Senate confirmation. But Senator Chuck Grassley has put that nomination on hold. The Iowa Republican saying his office has new evidence that Garcetti lied to Congress. Grassley claims Garcetti knew that there had been harassment claims made against his former Deputy Chief of Staff, Rick Jacobs, but he told a congressional panel that he was unaware of those allegations at the time. Well, here to explain what this could mean for Garcetti's political future is Megan Wilson. She's a reporter for Politico, where she broke the story about Grassley's investigation. Hey, Megan.
Hi, how's it going, y'all?
It's all right. Alex Michelson, he's a Fox 11 anchor, and he's hot off the heels of an interview with Garcetti and with one of his former staff members and main accusers. Alex, welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
As I mentioned, Megan, you and your colleague broke this story about Grassley's letter addressed to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell asking for Garcetti's appointment to be put on ice for a while until they could finish their investigation. Since you published that story about the letter, has anything changed?
You know, Capitol Hill has been eerily quiet, but, you know, that doesn't mean that nothing is happening. Grassley's office has committed to working on this, and they were sort of in the early phases when we reported it and reported the hold. So that is still ongoing.
Let's talk about the actual accusation. Grassley says he has spoken to whistleblowers who claim that Garcetti knew about the harassment claims about Rick Jacobs. Who were the whistleblowers, and what are they saying?
You know, the most well-known and the most vocal has been Garcetti's former communications director, Naomi Seligman. She's been trying to reach out to the Hill since last summer to, you know, raise awareness and, you know, raise what she says is the truth about the fact that Garcetti knew about his former top aide's alleged behavior. And, you know, Susie Emmerling, another person from Garcetti's office, has also talked with Grassley's office. But we know there's also more who have, you know, opted not to be public.
Alex, you recently spoke to Naomi Seligman, right? And she has claimed that Rick Jacobs harassed her, correct?
Yeah, she claims that after the mayor's State of the City address in 2016, that Jacobs grabbed her and kissed her and sort of walked out of the room. And it wasn't something that she approved of. And she made a statement to her boss at the time, Anna Guerrero, who said that essentially that's Rick being Rick and there's nothing we can do about that. Anna Guerrero disputes that, says that's not what happened. People in the mayor's office dispute that, say that's not what happened. Naomi is very confident that is what happened. But she also now is claiming that she saw inappropriate behavior from Rick in other capacities as well. So, you know, it's a sort of gets dicey where you have people, you know, who are credible people on both sides of this saying something didn't happen and something did happen. And that's part of the complications of this going forward. But it is a dicey situation politically for Mayor Garcetti. Just to expand a little bit about the parliamentary stuff, which is boring but important. If there wasn't a hold, what could happen is that Mayor Garcetti could be passed on what's called unanimous consent, which would mean they just bring up the name. If nobody objects, he gets through. Now that there's a hold, as she mentioned, that can't happen anymore, which slows down the entire process. I mean, I was with Mayor Garcetti as this story broke in the middle of shooting a different story. Right before the story broke, he was hopeful and somewhat confident that they would pass him through unanimous consent by Easter, which is in a few weeks from now. And now I think it's a very much a question of when, if ever, he's going to be passed.
I mean, you spoke to him. What did he have to say about the accusation that he lied under oath to Congress?
He strongly denies that. He says what he has said since the beginning of this and what he testified before Congress, which is that he claims that he didn't know anything about any misbehavior from Rick Jacobs, that if he did, he would have stepped in at the time and done something about it, and that this is all sort of political and people trying to take him down. There are other people like Naomi and others who are not Republicans who say that that's not believable. But the mayor is not changing his story and doubling down on it with passion, saying that this is not true.
Wasn't there a lawsuit by an LAPD officer against Jacobs as well, saying that,
right,
that he was harassed by Jacobs? I mean, this is in the legal system as well here in L.A.,
right. So there's a guy named Matthew Garza who was assigned to protect Eric Garcetti. He has a LAPD body man that travels with him. And he accuses Rick Jacobs of grabbing his muscles and massaging him and saying inappropriate things to him and making him feel very uncomfortable. He claims that the mayor knew about this and turned a blind eye to it. He is now suing the city over this, and there is a lawsuit underway. What Mayor Garcetti said to me is, you know, people have the right to sue, and there's a lawsuit process, and, you know, people will testify as part of that, but that shouldn't derail his nomination. But Garcetti made the same comment that he made to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in that lawsuit, which is that he didn't know, never saw this. So if that is proven to be untrue, you know, that would essentially be perjury times two, both in the lawsuit and in the Senate. Of course, Garcetti says what he's telling is the truth. But that, I think, is part of the investigation and potentially putting Garcetti at risk in multiple different places.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Garcetti and going to, you know, India. What we haven't really talked about is Rick Jacobs. He resigned, right? Yeah. He left the mayor's office. What is he saying about all of this? Do we even know?
He has said that these allegations are, quote, a work of fiction. The mayor says that he does not have a working relationship with Rick Jacobs anymore. There's some indications that Rick Jacobs may be doing some consulting work for some unions, but he has not sort of become a very public figure since all this happened in the way that he was before. Rick Jacobs was a very visible figure in LA politics and always at the mayor's side for years. If there was going to be an Eric Garcetti presidential campaign, Rick Jacobs was going to be the campaign manager for that. And you don't see him by Mayor Garcetti's side any longer.
Megan, do you think that the investigation in the Senate, you know, Grassley's office is enough to stop Garcetti's nomination from moving forward? I mean, where do we go from here?
You know, that's an open question, of course, but certainly Grassley coming forward, you know, top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, former top Republican on Senate Finance. And, you know, while those are not in the jurisdiction of, you know, foreign relations or ambassadors, Grassley has trusted investigators on staff. So the fact that he's looking into this certainly lends some credibility to the fact that there is an investigation and could be putting doubt in the minds of both Democratic and Republican senators. It's entirely plausible that that's happening, and that, you know, the White House has stood behind Garcetti and sort of doubled down on its support. But the longer this drags on, you know, the more questions and uncertainty may come into play with lawmakers here. So, you know, Garcetti is by no means sunk, but, you know, he doesn't have a clear path like it appeared he may have had, you know, coming out of, you know, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee vote.
Megan Wilson, reporter for Politico. Alex Michelson, an anchor here in L.A. at KTTV Fox 11. Thanks to you both for coming on and talking to us. We appreciate it.
Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The taco is to Los Angeles as the croissant is to Paris, or the schnitzel is to Vienna. Mexican food is everywhere in LA, but do you know just how diverse it is? There's a new museum that wants to immerse you in Mexico's rich culinary traditions. La Plaza Cocina is the nation's first museum dedicated to Mexican food. It's built as an extension of La Plaza de Cultura y Artes in downtown Los Angeles. Jimena Martin is the director of programming and culinary arts there, and she's here to tell us more about this Mexican food museum. Hi, Jimena.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, very exciting times. La Cocina, again, thank you, is an expansion of La Plaza Cultura y Artes' mission. With Cultura, you know, we celebrate poetry, music, art, dance, and now we have the opportunity to celebrate Mexico's greatest contribution, which is gastronomy, Mexican food.
Gastronomy. What? Why a Mexican food museum, though, when Mexican food is pretty much on every street corner in L.A.?
The Mexican gastronomy, I think what makes our place very unique is that this really small and mighty space consists of three parts. We have a beautiful exhibition, which is Maíz, co-curated by Maite Gomez-Rejon and myself, Maíz, past, present, and future. As you know, Maíz is the foundation of Mexican cuisine. And then right next to the exhibition space is this beautiful hands-on cooking kitchen. And within that space, we also have a comal, a teaching comal. For those who do not know what a comal is, it's a big griddle. So when there's an opportunity to use masa and make masa to actually cook on the comal, to get a full cooking hands-on experience. And adjacent, we have our little tiendita that has aprons brought in from Oaxaca, a range of local cookbooks from supporting our local chefs who've also been very supportive of the project, and many things, beautiful things to decorate your kitchen. But the main focus is that you go into the space, you cook hands-on, but also you learn a little bit. There are 32 states in Mexico, and what a better way to celebrate. So the possibilities of discovery are endless.
You mentioned that the exhibit is, the first exhibit for this new museum is Maíz. Why decide to focus on corn for this first exhibition?
Corn is the foundation. In the exhibition, we talk about the mythology, the gods, the corn gods, and how corn is part of Mexican identity. And it's the foundation of almost of many, many, many dishes. And also, it is the most famous indigenous ingredient of the Americas.
What else do you have in mind for exhibitions going forward?
Going forward, the exhibitions will be running every 6 months or so. So the next exhibition that we're working on with Sarah Portnoy of USC, right now the tentative title is Voces de las Abuelas. In this exhibition, we'll be looking at indigenous grandmothers, Mexican grandmothers and Mexican American grandmothers. And a documentary is being made as we speak. So the exhibition will highlight beautiful photographs of the Annenberg Space of Photography. So a lot of photos and also items that are very dear to these grandmothers to tell their story. And then following up that, if everything runs well, we open up in May, and then in September, forward through March, we'll be doing chocolate.
I could definitely dig the chocolate. Grandmothers, I mean, the abuelas, right? They are, that's sort of the same. You mentioned corn being the centerpiece of Mexican food, right? But without grandmothers, we wouldn't have those handed down recipes, right? And all the great food of such a wonderful tradition.
As you said, as Mexican, as they migrate and immigrate here to the United States, when people travel, people also travel with their recipes. And it's a great way to honor the ancestors, to replicate those traditions at home, and then to share and to educate and to really honor these valuable recipes that our grandmothers are here to bring forward and for us to record and savor.
You guys are open right now, but there's a grand opening coming up on April 10th, along with some other special events, right?
Yes, right now our hours will shift, but soft hours right now are Monday through Friday, 10 to 5. And then on April 10th, we invite you to come to our grand opening. And that's at Tardeada in the afternoon from 12 to 4. We're going to have demos. We're going to have Chef Ramiro and Jaime from La Casita. We're going to have Jocelyn Ramirez of Todo Verde and other folks there to have a little tastings, to learn a little about something. And then now that COVID has left us and now we're able to have in-person opportunities, we'll start offering hands-on cooking classes in May.
Well, I want to thank you, Jimena Martin, for coming on and talking about La Plaza Cocina. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, when COVID hit, The way a lot of folks in LA lived and worked changed, and people moved around. But to where? That's tomorrow on Greater LA. You can join us anytime online at kcrw.com/GLA, where you can share your thoughts and, of course, grab the podcast while you're there as well. kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Or, of course, you can get the podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Again, the website, kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Nihar Patel, Andrea Bautista, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thank you for your time and your ears. Have yourself a great night.